This is Inspector Toolbelt Talk.
Hey, Preston, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ian, thanks for having me on, man.
Nah, the pleasure's all mine. I'm really glad you made time to be on the show, and for everybody listening, today our guest is Preston Kincaid, who most of you probably know from the forums and Facebook pages, and you have a strong social media presence. You and a business partner of yours, AJ, and you guys just launched Best Inspector List too. So, wow, busy guy.
Yeah, I'm excited about the list. Is actually cool because if you know me, I love, I really, really love helping other inspectors. And, you know, it's funny because AJ and I were talking, we sit on these leads every day and we were trying to figure out like, how do we connect all these people that ask us every day, how do we find an inspector? And we try to get them into the groups and it's so cumbersome and clunky that it's impossible to actually connect social media leads with inspectors. So that's where that list came from. And it just kind of took off, man. And guys are getting inspections from it.
Yeah. And if I do my math correctly, between you and AJ, you guys have a more of a social media following than the president of the United States.
I think AJ does all by himself.
Yeah, well, you guys are doing something right. And, you know, we're actually having you on the show today to talk about something that crossed both of our paths recently. And I thought it was a great topic. And it came about with a discussion because some people got actually some upset and some upset in a good way about a comment that Nick made on a previous podcast. Nick Cremico, a couple weeks ago, made the comment on a podcast that he didn't like low-priced home inspectors. And, you know, it's not maybe how we would have expressed it, but I didn't necessarily disagree with what Nick said. I maybe not agree with how he said it. But it opened up a big discussion about vanity numbers. We say vanity numbers because there's a lot of things that we say in any part of our life that makes us feel good about something. So we're going to talk about vanity numbers today. And I wrote down a few here, Preston, and I mentioned to you before the show. And here's what we mean by vanity numbers. How many inspections you do a year? That's a big vanity number. I know lots of guys are like, there's a guy in my service area, brags all the time. I still don't know how he does it. But he does like 600-700 inspections a year by himself and he brags about it. It's like, okay. You know, how many inspectors work for you? How large your service area is? Guys bragging about, oh, I serve my entire state. Okay. How many types of tools you have and how many weekends you work? The tool one is funny. I think that's funny. And a couple of guys I know, they're like, look at all these tools I have. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's like not jumping in the ocean, but bragging about all your flotation devices and, you know.
I actually just cleaned out my car last weekend after coming back from Arizona. And as I opened up one of my storage boxes, I realized how many tools I have that I never use. Mm-hmm. And when you realize how few tools you actually need to do a good thorough inspection, it's kind of crazy to me when I actually start adding up all the math on those tools. Yeah. And so I agree with you 100%. I think that there's also some of the vanity around brands, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the guys believe that you have to spend a lot of money on really expensive tools when the truth is you can get by with you know, very inexpensive tools for what we do as inspectors.
Yeah, it's very true. As a matter of fact, some of the best inspectors that I've ever met in my life came about well before thermal imaging and drones and stuff like that. And I'm thinking of one guy in particular that, you know, the young inspector in me is like, man, if that guy was ever on an inspection with me, I'd be nervous. One of the few guys in the world that I would be with. But these vanity numbers came about because of Nick's comment, because whenever we mention pricing, people start to freak out because we're touching on a number that actually might affect us emotionally. And that is the bottom line number. Because Nick actually said, show me your bottom line on your taxes. Don't tell me how many inspections you did. Show me the bottom line on your taxes. Don't tell me how many inspectors you have. Tell me how much you made off of each one. Show me the real numbers. And that's true. Those are real important numbers and not the vanity numbers that we like to brag about. And it comes about because, like, you know, if we're charging $250 a home inspection or $300 an inspection, we actually talked about this and you mentioned it and we had a little discussion on one of the Facebook pages there, Facebook groups. And the numbers don't add up. I actually pulled out ZipRecruiter. I did the math. If you charge $300 an inspection, how much it cost you to do the inspection at the end of the year, you make about $25 to $27 an hour. My local Walmart warehouse on ZipRecruiter has an ad right now. Warehouse worker starting pay $26 an hour with benefits. And it's a great job. I have friends that work there with benefits, with dental and vision and a 401k.
You know, the pricing subject, as you know, I'm pretty vocal about it. And I kind of beat that drum quite a bit because I'll be honest with you, I'm frustrated right now because I've hit the pricing ceiling, right? Every single inspector in my entire region, my whole service area that I cover, they're almost all priced somewhere between $325 and $450. And there's one guy that's $475 base rate for inspections. Now, that's kind of a problem because we're creating a perceived value ceiling, which means consumers and realtors, by and large, think that home inspection should cost between $300 and $400. Now, I'm kind of, you know, I'm bound by that same ceiling. And here I am, I have a $650 base rate. So I'm pushing the top of that ceiling as much as I possibly can. And over the last 4 years, I fine-tuned my per inspection average, which has come way up. It's almost doubled. Mm-hmm. And so as we talk about these vanity numbers, this is where it gets really important to me because in my second year of business, I just about worked myself to death and I was burned out. And it was crazy because at the end of the year, I think I made like maybe $110,000 or $120,000. Now, at the time, I didn't think that was terrible. I was like, yeah, it's not bad. But that's not, you don't retire on that. That's, you know, especially in today's economy, that's just living. And so what I wanted to try to do was I wanted to get more money out of what I was doing. And I wanted to do less. I wanted to work fewer weekends. I didn't want to work my life away. We're already working till late at night writing reports, for God's sake. So what I realized was that ceiling that exists out there limits me. And I swear to you right now, I would literally charge $1,500 base rate if I could. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of guys that are going to go, what? What are you talking about? $1,500? That's highway robbery. And yet there are people in lots of different trades, lots of professions. There are business consultants that are charging double, triple, quadruple that. And it really just boils down to us valuing ourselves enough as professionals to say, what is it actually worth when you help somebody make the biggest decision of their life? We're all kind of anchoring, we're kind of boat anchors to ourselves by keeping our prices down in this realm. Because if I could just get my competitors in my area to raise their base rate by $200, I would raise mine by $300. I would go from $650, I would go up to $850, $950. I would push that ceiling. And if they raise their base rates to 1,000, I would push mine up to 1,200 or 1,300. But I've already figured out I can't go higher than 650, and I've tried. That's when you start getting the drop off, right? So I'm just pushing the bleeding edge of that pricing ceiling right now.
So there's a lot to unpack there because the problem with it runs very deep and complicated. So we tend to look at it very simplistically as an industry. Well, I need to make this amount of money. But your $1,500 is not far off from reality. So if we do the math of about $300 back in 1995 with inflation, cost of living, and I actually even used some examples recently of the cost of eggs is 2.8 times what it was in 1995. The cost of housing is 3 point something times. I don't have the math that I used in the other video in front of me. But now our inspection fee has only gone up by just a fraction, just about a little over $50 in the past 30 years. So we're not talking, the guy brought up a point, is like, oh, you're price fixing. It's not price fixing. It's wanting a living wage for what we do. What we do is a heavy thing. So $1,500 is not out of the scope of imagination. Just keeping up with inflation, not counting the elevation of our industry, more certifications, better tools, all this other stuff, is it would be a little over $1,000 for a home inspection if we charged at the same rate as we did in the mid-90s. So it's not price gouging, and people are buying a $400,000 home but wanting a $250 home inspection.
Right.
They're going to get a $250 home inspection. Let's just say that.
And I think it merits mentioning, and I say this in my webinars and I say this online as well, I think it's one of the biggest and most common mistakes that inspectors make is assuming that people want cheap inspections. When I raised my prices, I got busier. And then I raised my prices again, I got busier. I went all the way up to a $650 base rate, which is right about where I started seeing a lot of drop-offs. So I know that I'm teasing that edge. And so what does that tell you? It tells you that people want the best inspector. They're looking for the best inspection. They want the most thorough person. And how they're going to judge you is largely based upon your price and the perceived value they have in you. So there's a lot of people that don't want a cheap inspector.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's in every industry. Recently, I had a floor guy come in. I wanted to get my basement floor redone with some epoxy, and they grind it all down. It's really cool to watch. I'm a huge nerd. But they came in, and they presented it to me like, well, here's a cheaper option, and here's this, and here's that. And I'm like, I can't exactly remember how I put it to the guy. I'm like, don't talk about price right now. I want this floor to look cool. Show me the cool stuff. And he had to reprogram himself. I could watch him like, oh, he's just not looking for the cheapest thing. If we walk in, we're going to get the cheap people. The another guy came and bid the floor, and he didn't mention price either. He showed me all the coolest stuff. And he goes, we only do high end floors. And I'm like, perfect. That's awesome. That's what I want, a nice floor. Price was my second thought. I didn't want to get gouged, but I also didn't want to have the cheapest thing out there. So that assumption, it hurts our industry that people want cheap. And that's where we kind of need to redefine success when it comes to these vanity numbers. Because right. I know guys out there doing 200 inspections a year, making a little over $200,000 a year. And I know guys out there that are making less than $70,000 doing almost 500 inspections a year. So the first thing I hear when I say, are you doing well as a home inspector is, oh man, yeah, we did 40 inspections this month. And I'm like, no. You don't need to tell me your books. Are you doing well? Because I could do 10 inspections and make as much as your 40, hypothetically. It's about the bottom line. So how do you think we could reprogram ourselves to redefine success and not in vanity numbers like I did X amount of inspections. Instead, I made X amount of profit. Because that's really what we're in business, not because, you know, I love inspecting. I know you do. I like meeting people. I like doing cool things. I like finding mummified rats in an attic. And it's just fun. But at the end of the day, I do this to provide for my family.
No, it's true. I think that there's a metric that a lot of inspectors ignore as well, which is the quality of life metric, right? So if you're doing 500 inspections a year and you're working 7 days a week, your work isn't supporting your life. Your life is supporting your work, and you're just working yourself to death. And I was there by the end of my second year in business. I really had kind of a reality check where I just said, I like inspecting, and now I don't anymore, right? End of that year, I was just going, man, I'm burnt. Like, I don't even want to do this anymore. And I know I speak for a lot of inspectors who are there. You know, they're kind of at that burnout point. And then when I kind of refactored how I looked at my business, and I really am struggling with I catch a lot of heat from inspectors because my whole mode right now is keeping things simple. So it's all about keeping my business as simple as possible with the fewest moving parts. This is why we argue about, you know, radon, whether you use charcoal or CRM. It's like, great, I get all the features, but I'm keeping my life simple. And when I realized that I can fine tune, my sweet spot is 300 inspections. And I cleared $250,000. I did $250,000 last year. So Nick Romico, when he heard me say that, he actually, when I had him on to do an interview, he pumped the brakes. He said, you did what? And I go, yeah, I'm right now I'm at $250,000 in revenue. I'm comfortable with that. Like, that's a good place to be. But I'll be honest, man, if I can get people to raise their prices, I would do fewer inspections and I would raise my prices and I'd have a better life. Oh, and that's another thing that a lot of guys don't really acknowledge. Every one of those inspectors that's doing 3 or 4 inspections a day is taking 2 inspections away from another inspector. So by lowering your prices, you're not only keeping the price ceiling low for everyone, but there's also fewer inspections to go around. And I personally, I want all inspectors to succeed and thrive and to do well. I'm not trying to put anybody out of business or hoard the work. And so I want to do fewer inspections and I want to make more money. And I think that's really the focus. That's the metrics for success, really, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think that that's really, we need to change our mentality. And, you know, these vanity metrics are happy little lies we tell ourselves. And some of the happy little lies that I hear us tell ourselves is, well, I like to give people value. I like to save people money. I like to give them a fantastic inspection for $250 because they're good people buying a home. Okay, that's all well and good, but let's break down, even from the outside angle. Let's say we're that buyer and we've lowered the ceiling of price. So somebody accused me of price fixing, saying we should raise our prices. And it happens every time I mention pricing. I'm like, I'm not price fixing. I'm saying we should charge a living wage. You're price fixing by keeping the ceiling low. So now you're forcing the rest of us to adapt to that. And I don't compete with the cheap people. I know you don't either, but it does affect the rest of the industry. So let's talk about some logistics about it. So let's say a guy charges $250 for an inspection and he has to do 4 inspections a day. I know guys out there right now doing that. There's a guy in my service area right now doing that. So now 4 a day, how tired are you on each one of those inspections? You're one human being. Are we really giving that person the best version of us? Did we really take our time? I like to stop. I love to open up the computer, look at each inspection before I go. Like, man, look at that ridge line. Something's off with that. You know, this area has termites. Let me go back to one of my old reports where I did the neighbor's house. Yep, there's termites. And then I go and I look and I spend time with them. And if they need a little extra time, if there's more issues, I dig in deeper. The whole nine yards. I can't do that, to be perfectly frank, if I'm running around doing 3 to 4 inspections a day. And I'm a very experienced inspector. Been doing this 20 years. So if you're saying, well, you get better, I'm like, that's as good as I get, man. So
yeah, no, and you also don't bake in enough time to do the things that actually helps your business grow. A lot of guys mm-hmm. talk about the bottom line, but there's also there's a lot to be said for top line growth. So there's guys that are burning through the inspections and then having to do a lot of digital marketing and a lot of, you know, pay-per-click stuff or whatever, email marketing, all this stuff to kind of keep churning the work. But to be honest, if they were doing fewer inspections and spending more time building relationships, more time talking with the realtors, you know, cracking jokes, having lunch, whatever. I'm going to lunch with one of the managers of the largest realty group in the area. I couldn't do that if I had 4 inspections on Monday, right? But that one lunch is probably going to solidify the relationship with 37 agents, right?
And there's a great point. It's missed opportunity cost.
Opportunity cost is almost never spoken about. I brought it up a few months ago in relation to software, right? Which I'm really looking forward to talking about, especially with Inspector Toolbelt as I get switched over. But opportunity cost is a big one, man. It's like these guys buying this cheap software and then they're emailing the agreements and DocuSign over here and things like, there's no possible way I could run my business that way because the opportunity cost was more expensive. Your $50 software versus $100 software is costing you probably, you know, tens of thousands of dollars every year because you're rubbing sticks together to make fire.
Yeah. Missed opportunity cost is something my brother is a CPA and he talks about it all the time because it's an unquantifiable number, but it's a number that everybody worries about. Because like your example of a missed opportunity, you're running around, the agent is maybe new, but they're going to do 10 more deals that year. And you can't take the time to talk to them because you're off to the next inspection. That's a missed opportunity cost that you can't quantify. You didn't spend the time with them. Even 3 inspections a day, and everybody has their own thing, but I don't live in a city, and maybe sometimes a city you can get 3 in a day and do okay. It's not for me because I do the math. I'm like, okay, 45 minutes to my inspection, 2.5 hours on the inspection, 45 minutes to my next inspection. And then you do that all day, every day, even if you're only working 5 days a week, that's a lot. I have a family, you know, and I just, I like them. So I want to spend time with them.
Yeah, me too. I just got married 2 weeks ago. So
congratulations.
I'd like to spend some time with my new wife, right? But my version of success, to be honest with you, is to do one inspection a day. That's the max for me. I would like to work 5 days a week, do one inspection a day, and I'd like to clear $250,000, right? Mm-hmm. That's really hard to do with the price ceiling being stuck where it is. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the psychology of it, because I think that's an aspect that a lot of people don't want to be honest about. And so I get asked a lot, why is it that a lot of home inspectors don't want to raise their prices? It boils down to one thing and one thing only, and that's fear.
Yeah.
It's fear. So they're afraid of losing work, and they don't want to lose it to the next guy. And the fear is rampant, right? So what happens is new guys enter the business and they're afraid of not getting work. A lot of these guys got to make it, right? They got to put food on the table. So what do? They price themselves $50 less than the next guy. Mm-hmm. Well, that downward trend has been, you know, prevalent for the last couple of decades. And I don't think that fear is a success dynamic. That's not a psychological dynamic that has ever led somebody to being very successful. How are the most successful people, you know, how do they operate? Usually it's confidence. Usually it's taking risks. You know, it's being bold about things. And so I wish I could get people to just be less afraid.
I think since we're talking about psychology, there comes a lot of what they call cognitive bias, which is a psychological term. It sounds like you already know what it is. It's where basically we don't understand enough about something or know enough or have anything to compare it to, I think is a better way to say it. So we create our own cognitive bias. Should it be 0 to 100? I have no idea. Where do I compare it to? So I'm going to put it at 47. And we're just picking numbers out of the air. We do that with our own business. We have a cognitive bias because we're sitting here and we're like, okay, I know I can get work at $300 and this guy over here charges $300. So we just go for it. And it's a cognitive bias. We're just going with our gut basically because we have nothing to compare it to. Whereas oftentimes, and I did that with when I first started out my first inspection business 20 years ago. But then once I met people and they're like, dude, you're not charging enough. Charge more. Okay. Yeah. Here's what I charge. Here's how I charge. And they taught me. I'm like, cool. Thank you. Now that cognitive bias isn't a cognitive bias anymore. Now we have real information to go by. So fear keeps us at low numbers. And no matter what us top tier guys say, well, don't compete with the cheap guys. We're not competing with the cheap guys. It does affect the market overall, though.
That's true.
Now that we know and we have something to compare it to, it's no longer ignorance. It's a choice. We need to stop and pull ourselves out of it. And we can't be afraid of the consequences.
Yeah. You know, though, I think the hurdle for me and one of the reasons I kind of beat this drum a lot, and believe me, I take my lumps for it. It's not always good. But the thing is that the cognitive bias exists, but there's also cognitive dissonance, which is you can hold up this evidence to somebody. And there are some, you know, and I'm only going to mention his name because he posted it in the group and I loved it because Chet Williams is one of those guys that for years was charging a low number for his inspections. And he was saying, like, I'm busy all the time, right? And I was just harping on him, man, Chet, you're undervaluing yourself. Raise your prices. And then he did, and he got more work. Like, he got busier and was making more money, and he started losing some inspections. So he started enjoying his life more. Mm-hmm. And here's a guy going into his retirement years who finally figured it out and said, you know what, this nonsense Preston's been rambling about, there might actually be something to this. Because the cognitive dissonance makes us dismiss the evidence or the information that goes against what we currently think.
Yeah.
That cognitive bias is what we think in our head right now. Our currently held belief is what we cling to. And when somebody like me comes along and challenges that, it makes their brain feel uncomfortable. So they just dismiss me as a crackpot.
You know, I think that was very well said. And you're not a crackpot. That makes total sense to me. We get stuck in our own ways is another way to say it. And it's nice that you mentioned that he started to lose work. And that's something that we are afraid of. Oh, I'll lose work. I learned a long time ago, and I've said it in many other podcasts, my goal is to lose inspections. Every time I raise my prices, I don't want to raise my prices. Say I raise them $50. I don't want at the end of the week to have the same number of inspections. I want to lose one. Because now I'm making the same amount and working less and enjoying life. So that's a very diminutive way to say it. I mean, obviously, I don't want to lose all my work. Have a $5,000 inspection once at the beginning of the week. Take the rest of the week off. But we want to lose work if we're in that mode. If we're doing 500 inspections a year, burned out, we want to lose work. And the way to do that is to turn people down and just make less or make the same amount, or it actually usually ends up being more because you almost never lose work. But raise your prices and you'll make a lot more. The other one, though, how many inspectors work for you? You had mentioned something about this before the show. I hate it when guys brag about how many inspectors work for you. That's a real vanity number. And there's a guy that I know, we don't obviously never mention names, but he was just telling me he was having a hard time, mortgage is tight, this and that. And then I see him on the forums bragging about how many inspectors he has working for him. I'm like, that's a real vanity number, man. What are your thoughts on that, Preston?
Well, first of all, you know, I think at our core, you know, we talked about the psychology around fear. I think underneath it all, we all want to matter, right? We all want to feel successful. And who knows what our background is? Maybe some of us, our dads told us we'd never amount to anything, or who knows. But at some point, all of us want to feel successful, like what we're doing matters. Mm-hmm. And so to some people, I think those vanity numbers, you know, like I got all these expensive tools, or I have 20 inspectors that work for me, or, you know, I'm doing 500 inspections a year, like all these vanity numbers help to bolster kind of the outward appearance mm-hmm. of success, right? And for me, I got caught up in some of that myself. You know, I was resisting being a multi-inspector firm, but then I brought on a couple of guys and it always sounds great. You know, oh yeah, I got two inspectors working for me. Everything's great, until you pack three schedules and then one of them gets sick and gets COVID for a week. And now you're right, but you thought it was going to be easier having inspectors. Now you're doing three a day for 7 days a week trying to catch up, right? So people don't consider complication. Everything that you add to your business as a moving part, it triples complication. So for me, what I'm trying real hard to do in my business right now is just to keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing. I think that was very well said how you put it there. And we were talking earlier about the number in contracting. I have a contracting background and my boss always used to say 2 or 20. And he was talking about employees. He goes, when you have two employees, you have control, but you have help. One guy gets sick, other guy covers for him. One guy needs help, you help him, and you have control. Anything above two employees becomes complicated, a mess, you lose control, and you don't really have the infrastructure to handle it. And then 20 and above, now you're big enough where you can absorb some of the problems. So I've always loved that, the 2 or 20 rule. And that's when you really become profitable, not only monetarily, but life-wise. There's a life expense to everything we do. And I think a lot of it comes down to hustle culture. You know, you have, unless you're hustling so hard, if you're not hustling so hard, it hurts, then you're not working hard enough. And it's like, well, okay. But I mean, if you have kids, don't they need their mom or dad? If you have a marriage mate, and I'll say it, I know too many guys that I've worked with and helped over the years grow their business, go through divorces and, you know, all sorts of problems in life because they're like, oh, they say I'm working too much, but what else am I supposed to do? And providing for their future. I'm like, or is it a vanity number?
Well, here's a philosophy that I have I'll share with you. And so almost every parent I know raises their children to teach them about the value of money, being frugal, saving, pursuing a lucrative career so they can make good money and have a good life. And so we pretty much kind of raise our kids their whole life to hold these values and to think these things. We teach them how to be responsible with money, pay your bills, have good credit. But the one thing that I don't see a lot is we don't really teach our kids that, number one, you're born with only a certain amount of minutes. Mm-hmm. You only have a handful of minutes to live your life. And with all the money in the world, you can't buy a single extra minute, but you can always make more money. And so we kind of prioritize financial success, financial security. You know, the money aspects are something that's just kind of ingrained in us all through school. I mean, think about it. Our first 12 years of school are all what? To prepare us for a job or a college for a career. But we kind of tend to feel or act like we're going to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we forget to live along the way, you can wake up and you can be missing decades of your life. I've been there. I remember thinking it was cool to do 100-hour weeks for years at a time,
mm-hmm.
building a technology company. So you're probably there now with Toolbelt. But you can wake up one day and just go, man, I don't even remember the last 10 years of my life. All I've done is work.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, you're not listening to two people that don't have experience in this. 100-hour weeks, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, falling asleep at your keyboard, just working yourself to death. I've been there. You've been there. That's not success. It's being a slave to your business. So there's two numbers, really, and they're not really numbers, to determine whether we're actually successful. The bottom line of what we make and the time that it gives us in life. If our business is not giving us the bottom line, net proceeds that we want, or it's not giving us the hours back in our life that we want, we have not achieved success. Those are two ways to measure it. We're measuring our success in the home inspection industry really, really wrong. And, you know, I'm not saying that being multi-inspector is bad or anything like that. You know, obviously, it's me. I'm just saying that could we step back and say, okay, if we have 10 inspectors, okay, can I get a business manager? Can I make $80,000 less a year, but then take some time with my family? You've earned it. If we're starting out and we're charging $250 an inspection and we're doing all these inspections, can we raise our prices, do fewer inspections, and have more time with our family? Those are the two metrics that I think would define it: time and our bottom line, our net proceeds.
I agree with every word you just said. I personally like to leave more inspections on the table for others. One of the metrics, Ian, that I like to measure myself with, and I have, I'm telling you, last 4 years, is how many people can I help? Like, that's important to me. People talk to me all the time about my social media numbers and how that's growing and all that stuff. And I tell them all the time, I say, you know what number I'm most proud of is how many inspectors that I have relationships with. How many people have been through my Jumpstart program or message me daily with questions or come and shadow me for a few days, whatever. Like, that actually means more to me. Why? Because when I'm dead, my social media numbers are going to dry up in 90 days and people are going to quickly forget about me. But the people that I've helped grow their businesses and improve their lives, that's like a residue of my life that I get to leave behind. And that matters more to me. And that's also part of what I'm doing. It's not just all about inspecting houses. I'm doing my retreat in June, right? Man, I got inspectors coming from all over the country. We hang out in the woods and fish in the stream and get to know each other on a personal basis. That's meaningful. That's a metric for success. How many friends have you made in the business?
Yeah. Those are things that matter. You know, they matter in other industries too. I mean, you think about like a doctor. Does he measure his metrics by, okay, I got 15 heart transplants in today? It's like, whoa, buddy, hey, hang on. I want the doctor who's maybe doing three a day. Let's back up. And, you know, there's a doctor that I know, and he has up on his wall all the thank you notes and everything that he's ever received over the years. You know, does he make a good living? Yeah, he charges for it. He's a doctor. But when he helps people, he feels good about it. You know, that is an important metric.
I'm glad you brought up that analogy because I caught heat. My buddy Yuri the other day gave me some heat over this. He's like, I wish you'd stop comparing us to doctors and lawyers. But you know what? The truth is, the reason I do that isn't because I think I'm a doctor or I think I'm a lawyer, but I do think that we are professional consultants. And if I can think of that, if I can think of the physician level or the surgeon level or the lawyer, I'm at least aiming high, right? Like, I want to elevate what we're doing, our entire profession. I want to help elevate. I want all of us to be thought of in higher regard instead of being stuck in the contractor mindset or service provider or whatever. You know, yes, part of our job is crawling around in the dirt and crawl spaces, but at the end of the day, the most important thing that we do is consulting with our clients. We inspect the house, that's half of it, but we got to be able to communicate that to somebody. Give them advice, give them recommendations, and that's what they're paying for. And if we can start to think of ourselves in a higher regard, have a higher professional esteem, that's how we kind of raise the tide for everybody, right? And so when you need a heart transplant, to use your analogy, you don't shop around for the cheapest doctor because that's an important life thing, you know, your heart. So when you're buying a house, you're not shopping around for the cheapest inspector unless you're buying a trash house or, you know, you're broke. But at the end of the day, those aren't the clients I want anyway.
Yep. It's like, I still remember the time that I saw a Groupon one time, or maybe it was just a regular coupon for $50 off of LASIK surgery. And I remember standing there and looking at my wife and saying, with somebody with a laser in my eye, the last thing I want to do is hand them a coupon. I'm like, here's extra money. Just please. So there's a lot to unpack there, because when it comes down to it, the doctor analogy, lawyer analogy, engineer, architect, none of those analogies are far off base. We need to understand, even though we're not code inspectors, we need to understand what was code back then compared to now. Why does this look wrong? We need to understand multiple disciplines. We need to have very good people skills. We need to have good writing skills. We need to have all the skills that engineers, architects, attorneys, doctors, and all that stuff need. If you were to pile the books and all the InterNACHI courses on every aspect of a house in one big warehouse, I would imagine it would be as big or bigger than any one of those other professions that we just mentioned.
I completely agree. I caught heat a while back for making the comparison. I actually made a statement that said, I actually think that my job is harder than a lot of lawyers. And the funny thing is, a close friend of mine, a business partner, and two of my lawyers, I spend a lot of time with. Charlie Cochran out of California, good friend of mine. He's a business partner in my tech company. And I've hung out with him and other lawyers before, and you just kind of go, these guys will tell you straight up. Like, Charlie talked me out of being a lawyer because he goes, you don't want to do my job. I basically sit behind my desk and listen to people tell the same stories over and over again. And yet, this guy's charging, you know, $1,500 an hour, right? And I'm going, okay, what he's doing isn't that hard. They push papers around, and most of the stuff settled out of court. Like, it isn't like they're, you know, in front of the judge every day litigating in court. So we have to always be learning. Always, constantly, we have to connect dots. Like, our job is a lot of brain work.
It is. And it's a lot of book work. So, and the problem is, when we don't charge accordingly, we're like, well, how do I put this? When we don't charge accordingly, we diminish our industry to something less than it is. There's a reason why home inspectors, sometimes we have a bad name. Builders will make fun of us and all that other stuff. You know, there's a doctor that I know, and he says he takes about a month total, if you accumulate it through the year, just to keep up with changes in the medical industry. He goes, there's days of the week where I don't see any patients. I just study just to keep up. Now, sometimes we do that in the slow season, but if we're cranking $250 inspections, $300 inspections, are we really saying, okay, I've made enough that I can take a full day off to keep up with the changes in the industry? What's going on with closed cell insulation now? Or, you know, what are we doing with the hydrostatic pressure in this particular municipality? We miss out on a lot. We're not keeping up with an industry that's highly complicated.
I'll be honest. I'll be transparent. When I'm burned out and I'm chunking through 2-3 inspections and I'm just trying to keep up.
Yeah.
You know, I do catch myself sometimes kind of just going through the motions. I'm just checking the boxes, clicking the narratives. And there are times I have to pump the brakes and stop and go, wait a minute, maybe these things are related, right? Maybe there's a kinetic chain happening here. Maybe this is grade related. Maybe this is the weight of the roof covering causing these wall cracks. Like, and if I was just going 1,000 miles an hour with my hair on fire, I wouldn't have the time to stop and really think methodically about what I'm looking at, right? And I would imagine there's a lot of inspectors out there that are just churning through it like a treadmill, like a, you know, just like a process, like a machine. Instead of really looking at every house and, you know, reading it thoroughly, you know. And so I think that's where a lot of it falls into, you know, the second most common comment that I get on social media, and I'm telling you, it's by the thousands, is people saying, I had a home inspection and he didn't catch this, this, and this, and this. I paid a home inspector and he missed all this and I ended up having to, you know, replace all this crap.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, the first thing I think is, well, you probably price shopped. right? You're probably that person that called around to find the cheapest inspector you could. And that cheap inspector was doing four inspections that day. So what was he doing? He was rushing through it, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we elevate our whole industry? Number one, the price is kind of a core issue. Because if you're not charging enough to really spend time absorbing everything in that house to figure out what's going on, you're just crunching the numbers.
And that's a fantastic point. So let's say hypothetically, people balk at that $1,000 number. You know, our average inspection fee at any given time is anywhere from $750 to $1,200 in my companies. So imagine if we had $1,000 to do an inspection and we're used to $300. That's over three times as much. Would we feel comfortable then slowing down and just saying, what's going on here, like you just mentioned? Would we have the ability to do a better inspection and say, okay, I'm taking Friday off because I need to go and just keep up with the latest changes in the inspection and construction industry and improve in my craft? And now people will say, well, that's $1,000. People can't afford that. So the average home is $400,000. So that is 0.25%, if I'm doing my math right. So imagine we were buying a $400 tool and somebody said, I am going to give you the best inspection of this tool. I'll make sure everything works perfectly. You just give me a quarter. I'd throw them too. So it's the same with an inspection.
I would be willing to, you could throw out a date right now and I would open up my software right now and flip it around as long as we could blur out the names. And I'd be willing to bet you that any inspection on my calendar right now would be right there in line with yours, anywhere between $750 and $1,500.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's really right. That sweet spot average that I'm in, because the 650 base rate's also going to have ancillaries and everything else.
Exactly.
And then I hear these guys that are doing 275, 325, and I'm just going, you know, I have $2,000 and $3,000 days.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's a good day. I feel good about that. Would I feel good if I burned a 20-hour day and made $900? I'd rather go fishing.
Mm-hmm. You and I are proof that it's possible. And a guy told me, it was like, well, you've been around a long time. How long have you been around, Preston?
This is my fifth year.
Yeah. So it's not like you're a 20-year veteran. You came in and you're like, oh, I'm worth this. I'm going to raise my prices. And we're not too far from each other. It's not like we're from a wealthy, overly wealthy area where we can command crazy high prices.
That's kind of the funny thing is, if you saw where I lived, feel free to look up Shenango County.
This is an economically depressed area.
Yeah, I mean, there's dueling banjos on every corner here, man. It's economically depressed. This is not homes routinely are you know, I'm inspecting $75,000 houses.
Mm-hmm.
125 for good ones, right? I know people that are inspecting $500,000 homes or $1 million homes for $300.
I don't get that.
I mean, it's crazy.
I'm not saying my area is economically depressed or anything, but the town I live in has 174 people. It's like, I'm not living in New York City charging New York City prices. So it's not impossible. It's just a matter, I think you brought out a good point, getting over the fear and actually making the change, not just raising the prices for the sake of raising prices and elevating our industry at the same time.
I agree 100%. For me, I didn't feel good about doing three, sometimes even four inspections, because I knew that I was taking inspections away from other guys.
Hmm.
I didn't feel good about that. Like, I don't need to do all the inspections. I want everybody to do well. I wish some of them would just kind of, you know, keep up a little bit on the pricing thing. You know, if they see me charging $650, can you guys just come up to $500 maybe? You know, that would, because if you come up to $500, I'll go to $750.
Yeah. I wish more people would think about that and apply that. Not just think about it, but actually apply it. Because we talked about a lot of vanity numbers. If we're sitting around and we've thought about the vanity numbers of how many inspections we've done or how many employees we have, or do we have employees and all this other stuff, stop and think, do we measure our metrics like that? Or do we measure it in the bottom line on our books and the time of our life that we get back? And as Preston mentioned, helping people, those are three important metrics that when we look at anybody who's really quote unquote successful, they found a balance between those three things. You know, it's important. Preston, I couldn't thank you enough for being on the show. I could go on for hours here. We're running out of time, but we're going to have you on again. Maybe have you and AJ on both and talk about your the best inspector list and how that service is helping inspectors. And yeah, it was fantastic having you on. Thanks for sharing your wisdom.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. I had a good time. We've been meaning to do this for a while, so thank you very much for the time and the opportunity.
Yeah, if you ever have any thoughts or ideas, let us know. We'll have you right back on the show.
All right, sounds great. Keep doing what you're doing, man.
You too. Thanks.
On behalf of myself, Ian, and the entire ITB team, thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you can catch our future episodes as well. And if you have any feedback, please send us an email at info@inspectortoolbelt.com. Also, don't forget to check out our brand new app for home inspectors, scheduling and report writing all in one easy-to-use app. Check it out now at inspectortoolbelt.com.
The views and opinions of this podcast and its guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Inspector Toolbelt and its associates.